Good morning. We are learning Shmuel Beis. We are now starting a new chapter. We're up to the 12th Perek, Perek Yud Beis, page 270 in our packets. This story is now going to be the discussion of what David did in the previous chapter. David, as we discussed at great length, with the incident of Bathsheba, in that he took this woman who apparently was married, or maybe she wasn't married, as we discussed, because a divorce document was written by Uriah Chiti, her husband, before he went out to war. He dies during war, not because it was within the normal battle, but because David actually physically put him in a very dangerous situation so that 100% he would die. And we discussed that because he did that retroactively, their relationship, David and Bathsheba, when they came together, she was retroactively never married to him. And that also, Uriah Chiti deserved to die. He was what's called in Hebrew, Morn B'Malchus. He rebelled against the king, either, as we said, because he didn't listen to what the king told him to do. The king said, go back home, and he refused to. Or because in the presence of David, who was the king, who was the master, he referred to this great leader on the battlefield, Yoav, as Adoni Yoav. And the fact that he called him my master in the presence of David is something which is wrong. One's not allowed to do that. And therefore, he deserved to die. And instead of being killed in the palace, being sentenced to death by his head being cut off, instead he was sentenced to death by going back into the battlefield. But we did conclude that David apparently still did stuff wrong. He did something wrong. And we concluded last week with the end of the previous chapter, which is the sentences found still on page 270, Vayera hadavar asher asa David be'enei Hashem. No matter what excuses we can possibly come up for David, that he has every valid loophole in the book, nonetheless, be'enei Hashem, in the eyes of God, which are the very last two words of the previous chapter, he did something bad in God's eyes. And with that, we now are going to continue with seemingly unrelated story of a person who did something wrong. Nathan, as we're now going to see, Nathan the prophet, went to David, and David, who was obviously a very scholarly man, a Talmud Chacham, was constantly asked halachic questions. What am I supposed to do in this situation? What should I do in that situation? So Nathan presents the following question and wants to know what David's interpretation would be, what to do with such an individual. So let's see what was asked of David. Vayishlach Hashem es Nathan el David. So as we begin this sentence, we're going to just go through this entire question. We're going to see David's answer, and then immediately afterwards, Nathan's very short response, and we're going to understand this at greater length. So again, Vayishlach Hashem es Nathan el David. Nathan didn't just make this up on his own. He was sent by God himself to go to the king. The other way, love, and he went to him. The Yomerlo, and he asked David the following question. He said, listen, there were shnei nashim hayu be'ir achatz. There was two people, two men that were living in the same neighborhood, in the same city. Echad asher v'echad rosh. One was wealthy, and the other one, sounds like Rosh was a head, but Rosh, as Masudas Sion translates, is ani vadal. Rosh is a poor person. So you had two people. One was wealthy. He had everything imaginable, or almost everything imaginable. And yet there's Nebuch, this poor person that had very, very little. Okay. And this is what the Pasuk continues. L'ashir hayatzon u'bakar harbi ma'od. So the wealthy person had everything you can think of. He had all the cars and yachts and a home up north, and a home in Florida, and a home in Israel. He had everything. He had sheep and cattle. V'rosh in kol. When it came to this poor person, Nebuch, he really had nothing. Ki'im kivsa achas katana asher kana. All he had was this little animal, this little sheep that he had. It was small, and Asher Kana, he didn't steal it or anything. He purchased it however he was able to. It was probably because it was so small, probably malnourished. Because of that, the Pasuk says, Vayechayeha, that he caused it to live, which probably again means that it was a sickly animal. It was probably very, very inexpensive to purchase it. Certainly a poor person couldn't afford to purchase a beautiful, big, expensive animal. The Tigdal Imo, so he took this animal and he grew up with it. He took good care of it. He fed it. The Imbanav Yachtav, and he also brought it to into his house. He allowed his children to play with this animal. Like, so he purchased a dog, and they became affectionate to all the people in the household. Mipito tochal mikoso tishte v'cheko tishka. It wasn't that he bought him some dog food. Instead, he gave this sheep, he gave it bread from basically his own table, from his own coast, tishte, from his own cup did he drink. So he didn't put it in a little doggy bowl. He gave him the high, top quality human food. Probably because that's all he had. Whatever he had, he gave. He took good care of this animal. In his bosom, he slept. So it wasn't that the dog slept in the doghouse outside. Instead, he allowed his sheep to actually sleep in the bedroom, and somehow it gravitates onto the bed itself, and you can never get it off, especially all those dog hairs.
Maybe where pizza comes from, the word pizza.
Pizza is bread.
I know. Is it any of that
word? Pass. So, but Tehilo Kibas, it was such, they had such a close relationship, it was Kibas. It was like a child, like a daughter. And we certainly see this in this day and age, the tremendous connection, affection that one has for their pets. To the point that they feel like they are your own children. Sometimes they're better than children. They don't talk back to you. You know, they're more. They listen. They're more obedient than your own kids.
The dog loves you when no one else.
So that's why dogs. They say is kalev, is because it comes with lave, because something which comes to your heart. So a dog is man's best friend because it's close to your heart. So this animal that this poor person had, which he brought up and took tremendous care of, considered like a person's own house, like a real family member. V'yavo helech l'ish ha'ashir. So what happened? There was this wealthy person that we talked about that had a guest that came to his house. Obviously, the guest isn't going to go to the poor man's house. The poor man has nothing. So if you're a guest, you knock on the wealthy people's doors to get something to eat. The Yachmul Kachas Mitsono Umi Bikoro Lasos Oreach Habolo. So one option would be for him to actually take, thank you, for him to take his own animals, to take his own sheep, to open up his refrigerator, to go downstairs and to raid his own freezer. After all, he was a wealthy man. He had plenty of cattle. He had all the steaks you can possibly imagine. So he could have easily have done that. And it probably wouldn't have been such a tremendous big deal. What's the significance? He has thousands of steaks in his freezer. So he'd take out one. You know, what's the big loss? But he said, you know what? Why should I take anything from myself, even though I'm wealthy? I enjoy the fact that I have all these things. You know what I'm going to do? Be'ikachas kirsas ha'ish harosh v'yaseha l'ish habayi lav. So instead, he went to the poor man's house, and he took this little animal, this beautiful sheep that he had nurtured and cared for and fed, and lived in the same dwelling as he. And he took this animal, and he said, you know what? I'm going to take your dog. Well, not really a great example of a dog. I'm going to take this animal that you love so much, and I'm going to slaughter it in front of you, and I'm going to feed it to my guest. This is the story that Nassan is saying. Nassan is now going to be asking a question that this is a terrible thing that this wealthy person did. And therefore, he needs to ask David, what on earth should we do to this person? Because this is such a bizarre situation. It's such a lack of sensitivity this individual has to this poor person who has so little. What are we supposed to do to this person? You know what? He didn't even ask the question. He didn't even have to ask the question. He just framed the scenario. Page 272, Pasuk Hey. Immediately, David responds. He doesn't even ask What should we do? Immediately, Be'ichor af David be'ish ma'od. David was so upset, he was so shocked at the terrible behavior of this individual. And he couldn't believe how anyone could act in such a terrible way to take a little thing, the one thing that this simple person has, well, a person has so much. Vayomer el Nasan, he turned to the prophet and says, you know what? I'll tell you what you should do to this person. Chai Hashem, by the life of God, which is a language of an oath, I swear, ki ben moves ha'ish ha'osa zos. This person that committed such a terrible crime, who's so insensitive and so terrible, he deserves to die. Deserves to die. We look in the
story, the Purim story. You know, yes. What should we get the same
story with Purim? Right. That's right. So we look at the Masudas David. We're going to be going back in a few moments to understand this whole story a little bit better. But if we look at the Masudas David, as I'm trying not to give anything away, the Masudas David says, Vayichar af David, which is the very first part, which is underlined on page 272, Ki chashab, because David thought, She'emes ha-davar ne'esa ha-toeva ha-zos. He thought this was a real, legitimate question, and someone committed this treachery, this toeva, this abomination. What a terrible thing you can possibly do as to take someone's one little thing away from them. Pasuk Vav. So the first thing that David said to do is that this person should die. Okay, that's a nice psak halacha. Yes, hakivsa yishalim arba toyim. And not only that, but instead of just giving back to this poor person one animal, instead he should give back fourfold. And the commentators explain that the connection is that we know that when it comes in the Torah, it talks about if you steal something from someone, you have to pay kafel twice. And the Rambam says that's logical, as we've said before, is the mida kenegan mida behind that, is if you steal $100 from me, and I'm lacking $100, we want you to understand the pain of having lost $100. So you, by giving $200, you're giving me back my $100. But now you're going to have lost what I lost. You're going to lose that same amount. However, when it comes to the stealing of an animal, the Torah tells us when it comes to an ox, a shor, or a serah sheep, you pay as much as four or five if you would slaughter the animal or sell the animal. And that's an extra punishment that goes for a person who goes beyond the stealing aspect. So it wasn't just that he stole this object, but he also acted like a big tzaddik and he gave it away. Like, so this person walked away and said, you know what, you should go to this philanthropist in such and such a city. He's so generous. Look at this beautiful, delicious lamb chops that I ate. Little do they know that it was stolen from the poorest person in the city. So Pasuk Vav continues and says, V'es ha-kivsa yishalim arbatayim. So he said that he should pay back fourfold. Ekev says, Masudas Tzion Bavur, because asher also has a dabar hazeh el asher lo chamol. Because he did such a terrible thing, and then he showed absolutely no remorse, or it's translated here as no pity for the crime that he committed. So the commentators deal with a basic halachic issue over here. There's a concept in halacha which the Talmud establishes as fact, and it's called kimla b'berabim ina, which means we give only the stronger of the two punishments. So for example, let's say a person commits a crime in which the punishment is death. So let's say, for example, a person robs another, and in the exact same process of stealing $1,000 from this man's pocket, he also murders him. In which this person is convicted to be sentenced to death, but there's also another concept of you have to pay. But in halacha, there's a principle that the only thing that we require you to do is the more severe punishment. In other words, in the event of this situation, even though this person lost $1,000, you're not required to pay his relatives the money that you stole, because that's already a second punishment. The Torah only requires the stronger of the two punishments. If you do two things simultaneously at the exact same time, you only have to pay do the more severe one.
It's not like an hour justice system where you're on two counts, five counts, ten counts.
Right. It's the pasuk specifically says kedera shaso, that the person will be punished according to his wickedness. And the Talmud says mishumar she'achas atamachayva v'yatamachay mishem shtei rishiyot, which the Gemara says you can only be punished for one. You only get one punishment, the more severe of the two. And of course, there's a lot of rulings as to when this applies, when this doesn't apply, but the commentators gravitate toward this sentence and are puzzled how David could ever say such a psak. The first question is, how could he say this person deserves to be killed? After all, he didn't kill anyone. With the fact, okay, I'm a thief. It's not the nicest thing to do, but I steal. That's what I enjoy to do. That's not a capital offense if I steal things. But he says that this person deserves to die. Okay, so I decide to steal from the poor, right? I do the opposite of Robin Hood. That's a terrible thing to do. That's not a capital offense. It's very strange that David feels that this person deserves to die. So let's immediately answer that question by looking at Rashi.
And taking away his food.
Oh.
He has no food. He could subsequently die.
Very good. That's what Rashi says right here. Rashi says, very good.
No, but it was worse than stealing his food. It was like stealing his daughter.
Right, but it wasn't. It was kibbutz.
Yeah,
it's still an animal.
You can
think your dog is the most amazing thing. If I would go ahead and kill your dog, it's not the same thing as killing a person. Even if you love your dog more than you love your kids, but in American law, I killed an animal. I mean, PETA's gonna not like me for it. I'll probably get in a lot of trouble. But it's not. I'm not gonna be on death row for it. So Rashi says like this. That's the key is the prefix kibbutz. But Rashi says the very first Rashi in 272, which you just alluded to, hagozel es ha'ani ki'il notel es nafsho shene'emar es nefesh bal vikach. You're right. The reality is you didn't pull a trigger by and kill this guy, but the fact that you stole food from a poor person. Even though the reality is this guy probably would rather starve to death. He never would have slaughtered. Maybe if he had nothing, then maybe he would have. He would have had no choice.
Right.
I mean, we find that if you have no choice, he would have not enjoyed doing it. But stealing from a poor person, says Rashi, it's as though you actually killed him. Because in reality, you're causing him to die. Because he's not going to have any food anymore. So he's going to die. So therefore, even though in reality, the commentators interpret the sensitive words of David. David doesn't really mean this person is going to be killed. That he's going to be sentenced through the Sanhedrin or the Jewish courts and have this person killed. But Chai Hashem. Chai Hashem means, as we said, it's a strong language, like an oath, but it also could mean in God's eyes, bidei shemayim. You wouldn't have been killed. This person doesn't deserve to be killed in the court system for having done what he did, because he didn't murder this man for stealing his animal. But it's as though, as Rashi says, ki'ilu notlos nasho. It's as though he killed him, and God will hold you accountable to the extent that God will kill you. What do you mean God will kill you? It means that in Olam Haba you will not have this connection, this devekus to God. And therefore, it's as though you have been completely removed, kares, separated from the Almighty. Which is some also explain that this is, instead of Misei B'nei Adam being killed here, Misei B'nei Shemayim. He would have been killed by the heavenly court. God would have sentenced him to death in the heavenly court. And that's what David is referring to. And interestingly enough, the commentators explain, to answer this Gemara question, really, is that the only time we are do not allow two punishments for the same crime simultaneously is if the court system is the one that says, I'm going to sentence you to death, and by the way, you owe me $200. That we cannot do. And the reason why is because in that situation, both of them must be carried out. Why must they both be carried out? Because even if you do tshuva, if Beis Din says you murdered and we're going to sentence you to death at 10:15 this morning, so the next 9 minutes the person cries and does the most unbelievable tshuva, his prayers are more heartfelt than kneel on Yom Kippur, he's still going to be sentenced to death at 10:15. Doesn't make a difference, even if you did tshuva. A Beis Din sentences you to death, they will carry out that sentence. However, when it comes to Misei B'Nishamayim, when God is judging us, in that situation, tshuva has the opportunity, the ability to remove that verdict. And therefore, to explain this Gemara question, David was correct, because he wasn't saying that this person should be sentenced to death here, but it should be a death b'dishmayim from God. And therefore, he's allowed to get the two punishments, the punishment of money, having to fork over fourfold, as well as misa b'dishmayim, because he has the opportunity to remove himself of that, the one of from Hashem, if he does tshuva, and therefore he'll only really end up getting one punishment, so it doesn't contradict this concept of kinyan b'rabbanan. That's just a little lungdus, if you will, if I can use that term. So, this is the psak of David.
Parsha of Akev is like the heel, isn't it?
Yeah, but it also means because of it.
The Parsha Akev, what is it?
The opening words of, which we'll be reading in a couple of weeks, V'hoya Akev Tishma'un, does not really mean if heel you listen. It means, right, Akev means, doesn't mean heel, but Rashi interprets it as the mitzvos in which people trample upon, like with the heel, which means the mitzvahs which we do not value or we do not consider to be as important or significant as others.
That doesn't have any effect here.
It could. If you think about it, it's possible. It's possible that Akev in this situation...
Exactly.
He didn't think much of it. He thought nothing of taking his neighbor's only possession.
So that's a very good point that you made. So Akev over here means... this person, it doesn't talk about who this person is. He doesn't mention any names, Nathan the prophet. But whoever this person, this wealthy person was, he obviously trampled upon this wealthy person. He didn't consider him to be important or significant to the point that he even stole this small little thing. So it's possible you can interpret it that way as well. So let's just see the next six words. Alright? So David is... angry, that person deserves to die, terrible thing that he did. And you can imagine David's feeling pretty good. I'm a big tzaddik, this person's a terrible Russia, whoever this person is, go back, and that's what you should tell them. Vayomer Nasan el David, so Nasan turns to David and says the next two words. What are the next two words? Atah ha'ish! I'm talking about you. This whole story... it's not some guy with a sheep and a little poor person and this. The whole story is you. The whole thing is all about you. What do you mean it's all about you? So now let's turn to page 270. We look in the Radak. The Radak is very clear in explaining the entire mashal to this parable to exactly what's going on here. So if you look in the Radak on page 270, this is the following mashal, parable. Does everyone see that? Okay. Hamashal hazeh, mevur. This parable is explained. Ki David hu ha'ashir. David certainly was, he was a king. He had a lot of money. He was a wealthy person. Shehayu lo nashim rabos. And he had a lot of things. He had a lot of wives. We're going to see in a moment, six to be precise, not including the concubines. Right. The Uriah Ha'ish Harosh. Uriah Chiti, the person who was killed, was murdered, I guess we can even use. He's a poor man. What do you mean he was poor? All he had was this one woman, this woman right here, Bathsheba. That's it. You had the whole world to choose. And you had to pick her. So, Mash Omar Asherkana. What does it mean when in the mashal, in the parable, it said that this poor man, which we now know is really referring to Uriah Chiti, why does it say that he purchased her? What does that mean? It sounds a little bit derogatory to say, certainly in this day and age. So the Radak says, that's no big deal. He, Adam, Kona is Ishto, be Kedushin. We know that in order to betroth, it's necessary for the man to give a woman something of value, a pruta. We give a ring. something you have to give, and that's called kiddushin, and that's through a form of an acquisition. That's the language. So it's the same idea. You give your wife, this woman, to be something of significance. Umash Omar betigdal imo beim banav yachtav. So what does this mean? This is interesting. I know someone asked the question before. Was did Uri Achiti and Bathsheba have children? Did they have children? So the Radak feels that they did not. Betigdal imo beim banav yachtav. Even though the parable says that they did have children, Amru, what he meant was ki bonim hayu lo miish acheres hayislo umesa. How he knows this, it's not so clear. In fact, not all the commentators really understand this or agree to the words of the Radak. But just translating the words of the Radak, that Uri Achiti was married before. Uri Achiti had children from a previous marriage, and his wife passed away. And then he married Bathsheba, so it was Uri Achiti's second marriage, or at least second marriage. So the Radak, for some reason, it feels obligated to paint the picture that Bathsheba didn't have any children from Uri Achiti. Okay. So that's what it means, that they had children together, that the animal was together with the children. Then the Radak says, V'helech v'or reach. Now you'll notice, keeping one finger on the Radak, you'll notice when it came to Pasuk Dalet, the last two lines on page 270, I underlined three words, Helech, L'oreach, and Ha'ish. If that's the same verse, verse 4, I underlined those three words, which is, Helech is translated as a wayfarer, someone who's just coming and going, someone who's not connected to your family any way whatsoever. The second word that I underlined in verse 4, L'oreach, is a guest, and Ha'ish is someone who's actually a prominent member of the household. So now let's go into the Radak. V'helech v'oreach. What was Nathan the prophet saying to David? This is what he was alluding to. Hu hayetzer hara. When it came to this guest, well, who's this guest? Who's the third party? The third party was the yetzer hara, within the evil inclination that was found within David himself. V'holach v'oreach echad. That he went and became as a guest in David's desires. Rabbi Seinu Zal darshuhu kan. And from here, the Talmud in the 5th chapter in Sukkah discusses and derives from this sentence the nature of how a Yetzer Hara sneaks into our lives ever so slowly and then ultimately grabs tremendous control over ourselves. Ki Yetzer Hara betchilu hu doma lehelech, which is the language of the Pasuk, that the Yetzer Hara starts off as just like a nobody, a traveler. He just stops by, he gives a wave, maybe give him a cup of tea, and he leaves. He doesn't even sleep in your house. So the Yetzer Hara is very disconnected at first to the person. Afterwards, he becomes as a guest. So a guest, unlike the first person, he comes, he stays a little bit, he even sleeps at your house, maybe a day or two. And maybe the next time he comes into your community in a few weeks later or a month or a year even, he'll know to keep coming back to your house, and he knows that you take pretty good care of him and he feels pretty comfortable there. And what ends up happening? Sometimes you have guests like that, you know, that the guests become, they don't know, they forget that they're guests. And that's how the Yetzer Hara is too. The Yetzer Hara sometimes forgets that they are guests within ourselves. And they become the Baal HaBayis. Not that we control it, but rather it controls us, to the point that the Yetzer Hara ultimately causes us that we lose our own control, that we have no real essence of ourselves. And that's the reason. Let's just finish the next couple lines. Ratzalomar Shemoshel Al-Ish. And therefore, this is the parable of this last part of the sentence that Nathan says that he gave food to the Ish, to this prominent person. Lafika karu Ish v'yaseh al Ish habayilav. So, the Radak, and that this is up until this point, we didn't finish the Radak, and the Rashi basically says the exact same thing over here, which I did underline, which you don't have to see, because the Radak points out the same Chazal from the Gemara in Sukkah, that this is the nature of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara starts off that it's no big deal. You can take it or leave it. Certain things that even the first time you do an Avera, you feel, I don't really need to do it, and I don't even really enjoy what I'm doing. And then ultimately, the first time you try it, you do it a second time. As we said numerous times, the Talmud tells us that once you do it a second time, Nasal Keheter, it's like it's easier. It becomes innate to the point that you turn around and it just becomes part, it becomes second nature. You don't even realize that you're doing a sin. That's what it means, Nasal Keheter. It's like you're doing things which are permissible. Things. It's like you're walking and tying your shoes, so you're doing a sin. You don't even think about it anymore. Which means that the Yetzer Hara, which originally, if you stopped it right away, you could have controlled it, you could have stopped it, now has complete control over you. And that the scary idea of this parable is that David and this Ish are the exact same person. It's not that the mashal, it's the actual story of the sentences, sounds like they're two completely separate people. You have a wealthy person, a guy comes into his house, and he gives them food. But the way that we're painting this picture, these two people are one. That the Yetzer Hara completely embodies and takes over the person, that you almost have no essence, nothing other than yourself. The Yetzer Hara completely drives you away. And still in the middle of the Radak, and it's not in front of us because it's from the previous chapter, but when David woke up from his sleep, the Pasuk tells us, V'yishalech al gag beis hamelech. Interesting language. It says that he went up to the roof. But it also uses that exact same language. That's how the pasuk begins. When he initiated the relationship with Bathsheba, he went up. It was v'yishalech, which again is the same idea as comparable to a wayfarer. Someone who really could have separated himself. So the very first time that you do something, you still have that chance to break away. But the more and more you do it, the more difficult it is. And there are different ways you can compare this, certainly when it comes to gateway drugs, as it's called, not to be compared to the Torah organization gateway. Gateway drugs is it's like alcohol. So you take a little alcohol the first time, it's no big deal, and then you turn around 10 years later, you see a person's addicted to the most severe drugs. And if they look all the way back, if you could actually have a conversation with these people, they could actually remember the first time. And that first time, they may have tried alcohol or some drug, some illegal substance or illegal, and they probably didn't even care for it, but maybe because of peer pressure or whatever, they just decided to do it, they tried it again, and then ultimately, here they are today. And that's the scary thing of the Yetzer Hara, to the point that you become addicted, that you have absolutely no control over yourself. And that is what Nathan is saying was you, David. Don't rationalize. Don't start thinking this excuse, that excuse. Oh, she wasn't really married. She had a get. He was murdered. He committed a crime against the king. Stop the excuses. That's all your Yetzer Hara. Your Yetzer Hara has completely controlled you, and now that is the reason why you did what you did. Let's finish up this Radak.
I'm just this thing with the Ha'ish.
Yes.
Mashal,
yeah,
is the poor man.
No, it's a wayfarer.
The Ish is
no.
the man who came to the but wealthy man.
A kisat ha-ish, harash. It's the poor man. This ha-ish that you have underlined.
That, you're right, I made a mistake. It should be the Ish three words after that. Thank you. Let me please cross that out.
The wrong Ish.
Yes, I did. I saw the word Ish. I said that has to be the Ish. I didn't really read the verse. You're absolutely right. It's the Asel Ish Haboy Love. Thank you very much.
That's Ish Harash, the poor man.
Right.
It's the
Ish Haba I love. That's the
Ish
twice.
The first Ish is referring to the poor person. Right.
Okay.
Absolutely right. That was a mistake. Very good. So, but it still is derived from the word Ish, but it's the Ish Haboy Love. Wrong guy, right. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Alright, I'll have to get my white out. So, let's finish up the Radak over here. So the Radak says, V'David lo haven ki mashal hu. David heard this whole story, and maybe we figured it out at one point, but David just, right, he didn't get it. The Omer, he said, ki ben mavesu derech guzma. So when he said, according to the Radak, that this person deserved to die, it's a guzma, it's an exaggeration. As we said, because it was difficult to understand that this person would be sentenced to death for stealing, we gave another spin how it's possible, maybe a death by God for having done such a terrible thing. Kilo yischayv adamisa ba'avur gzeil gneva. The Radak says he can't literally be killed for stealing. Avlofish also davar b'chora omer ki ben mavesu ha'isha osazos. He just used this very strong language because he did something which was ugly, disgusting, such a terrible act, and therefore that's the reason why David said what he did. Okay, so that's
the Radak. This one is also, the question was a little bit off because the Kifsha is really, what's her name?
Bat Sheva.
It's not, in other words, he's not killing the sheep. He's killing the warrior.
If you look in the Radak in Pasuk Ches, which is underlined, we're not going to see the whole thing because it's really out of context. We didn't see this Pasuk yet. But if we remember all the way back, and some of us got a chuckle, that when it referred to not Bat Sheva, but it's possible also Egla is Esha Shaul. We said that Michal was called an Egla, which was a little calf. So it's you're right, it wasn't killed, but you see how they're comparing. Bat Sheva wasn't killed.
No, Uriah is being killed. So in other words, it's not...
Right.
It's not that Uriah was killed, it's that his wife was taken away from him.
You're right, it's not...
It's not a perfect mashal.
Right. And the question is, so why didn't he make it a perfect mashal? Why didn't he actually say... Right, that's what we're gonna read over here. I think there, Barbanel says it. The question is, why didn't Nathan come up with a better parable and say that the wealthy man came, with his guest came to this wealthy man's house, and instead of slaughtering the...
He killed the poor man.
Right, why did he say kill the poor man? Mm-hmm. So that's a question. So let's look at the English over here, which I underlined a little bit on page 271. It's all really pretty amazing, but let's just quickly go through some of it. So this is actually the part which I wanted to... I shouldn't have said that, Radak. The English over here quotes the Sanhedrin 69b, which is on the bottom left. It says, Uriah's only wife, Bat Sheva, is represented as a small ewe because, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, she was a young girl when these events took place. Her youth also explains the expression, he raised it and grew it up. Right? And it grew up. And if we recall, Bat Sheva, as we translated before, the Talmud says, whether you want to take this literally, it means a daughter who was seven. That she was 7 years old. Her parents were 7 years old when she was born. She was 7 years old when she was married, taken. Right, that's how some interpret that, what it means. Yeah. Which, of course, is against the law nowadays, but the idea, of course, is that we mature differently than they used to.
Well, right. Not only that, there was some kind of betrothal, not necessarily marriage.
That's what we talked about as well. It's a good point that it wasn't... That's why it says that how could it possibly be that she had children? Maybe she didn't have... How did she have children? She was so young. So the Radak said that he had children from a previous wife. And we also mentioned that she did not actually have Nisuin, that they actually were not... Oriachiti and Bat Sheva were never intimate together. They only had Kedushin, not Nisuin. That's how we interpret it. It's still adultery. What?
Because she was still so young.
It doesn't say why, but that could possibly be why. Of course, the problem is that David... Correct. Right. And maybe at the time... whatever. That's how some interpret. But either way.
How old was she supposed to be when she was on the roof?
That's what we're saying. She's not too young to be on the roof.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
She grew up.
Right. And if we recall also... one of the questions that was asked, okay, maybe she wasn't, he didn't commit adultery through that loophole, but was she a nida? And they said, no, she went to the mikvah. And of course, she became pregnant.
Right.
She got pregnant, I mean, so, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So let's look in English over here on the right side. The Abarbanel shows how the sages analysis of the Yetzer Hara applies to the case of David Batsheva. When he allowed his passion to overpower him, he thought it would be only a one-time relationship. But when Batsheva found out she was pregnant, the matter could not be ignored. David attempted to entice Uriah to go to his wife, and eventually he felt compelled to take the extreme measure of sending Uriah to his death. So the Yetzer Hara had managed to infiltrate David's sense of right and wrong. So maybe the initial sin, the very first time you make a mistake, and that's it. I'm not going to do it again. But because of that one mistake, if you want to call it that, David had with Bathsheba, she got pregnant. Therefore, he had to cover up that mistake. He had to make that lie, and cover up this.
So he wanted him to go back to his wife so that they could palm it off as his child.
Right, right. That's how we saw Rashi. That was the reason, right? And that's what he was hoping. So he wouldn't have to kill Oriachiti. He refused to go home. He said, "How could I go back home? My brethren are dying on the battlefield. I need to go back." So he refused.
But we also read somewhere that he knew why he wanted to go.
He probably right.
He was going to accommodate him. So
right. It sounds a little bit strange that you're calling me from the battlefield to go back home. Why?
Yeah. If he would have been taking someone from his line to swear a line, the baby, and putting it someplace else and never acknowledging that fact, he was a
royal baby.
Right. Right. It's a very difficult. That's what the Abarbanel is saying. That's what the Yetzer Hara does. The Yetzer Hara clogs. Absolutely. Let's look at this next part, which is in English. So that's another interesting way the Abarbanel explains this mashal. The parable could have added. This is the question that I believe that was just asked. That the rich man killed the poor man in order to take his sheep away. But Nathan omitted any allusion to the killing of Uriah, which was probably David's most serious offense. So the question is why? The prophet may have felt... So he gives two answers. I like the second one better. Let's see the first. He felt that if he had made the parable too similar to David's actions, the king would recognize himself and be less harsh in condemning the rich man's plunder. So he didn't want it so obvious. If you made it so obvious, he'd be like, "Hey, you're talking about me? And let the guy live, no problem. Give him an award, give him a prize." So the fact that he didn't say it this way, okay. So that he couldn't recognize it as clearly. This is a beautiful explanation I really like. The omission was intended to make David's condemnation of the rich man and thereafter of himself even harsher. Why? When David was so appalled at the oppressor's cruel greed in taking the lamb, Bathsheba, that he exclaimed that the man deserved to die, even though the Torah does not prescribe death for even the most heartless robber, Nathan would chastise him, saying that causing Uriah's death is much worse than mere theft. No matter
how egregiously,
thank you, it was carried out, says the Abarbanel. So it may also be that the sentence of Uriah could be rationalized because he was guilty of his disobedience and insolence. Nathan preferred to focus on the way in which David acquired Bathsheba as his queen. But the second explanation of Abarbanel is really very nice, is that he wanted to almost him to derive what's called a kal v'chomer. So if this person deserves to die in your eyes, right. So certainly imagine that he would eventually have killed the poor person in order to steal this man's animal. Certainly he would have deserved to die, and therefore it would give him the opportunity to reflect a little bit on his own actions. Okay. Before we move on, the question is asked about this idea of 4 and 5, right? Arba v'chamisha, all right? Maybe we won't move on. Arba v'chamisha. So the Talmud says, why do we punish a person who stole and then slaughters sells an animal more? What's the difference? You stole my animal. What do I care what you did with it? How does it affect me? Right? You stole my animal. So I can understand why you pay me back kfl, you pay me back double. But why should I be paid 4 or 5, the fact that you decide to slaughter or sell it? What if you just keep it in your house? You only have to pay me kfl only twice. What's the reason? So the Talmud says, it's not because of my loss, the one that you stole from, But rather, as the Talmud says, Mipnei shnistarish b'chet, because you have rooted yourself in sin. So it's a punishment for the person that committed the crime. It's not me, the one that the crime was committed against.
Not compensation. Against.
Right. I mean, it's a penalty. It's what's called knas. And the reason why there's this penalty is not because of anything more you did to me, but it's the fact that you just continued to make more and more mistakes. Nothing stole it, but now you're going to sell it and act like you're it's yours. So you sell it to someone else, you slaughter it and take it as though it's completely yours. And therefore, this is why, this is the connection between what David was saying and also what David did. That David was saying that it's not enough that this person stole this person's animal, but to act like it's his and to give it to this poor person, to this guest, that's terrible. And therefore he deserves 4 or 5. And of course, that was David's mistake as well. That David himself ended up taking something, taking Bathsheba. Not only that, but beyond that, acting as though he did absolutely nothing wrong. Hence the expression, Avera Guerreras Avera. Okay.
What's the reason also that Rush is spelled without the Aleph the second time? Ration instead of Rash Arish.
Because what else, what could that, what does it mean with an Aleph?
It was a Sesh.
A Rosh is a like a head, right? A leader.
No, but I mean the first time.
Oh, is that what you mean?
No,
oh, go ahead.
The first time it says Echad Ashir Echad Rosh.
Right.
The Aleph. And the second time it says, well, Ashir Hayatzaon Ubakav Arabay Ma'od. The La Rosh ain't called. There's no Aleph there. So it's just like.
Right.
But the Tzitz HaTzion said Rosh means, with an I, Aleph means Ani with a dog.
And why is it without that?
Second time he didn't use his name.
So, well, it's usually written without an Aleph, if
yeah,
I recall.
It says
right?
Here that with an Aleph.
Right. I'm wondering if, based on the what we were learning about yesterday on Tisha B'Av, the videos of the Chavetz Chaim Heritage Foundation talked about kina, about jealousy, is that you can even maybe look at a poor person, and if you're lacking the one thing that they have, you have millions of dollars, millions of things, they have this one little thing, but if you lack it, you don't look at that person as a rush. You look at that person as the Rosh, like he has more than you have. So it's possible, also you can spin it a different way, that you could be poor, but if you have the smallest thing and you appreciate what you have, you're really not a Rosh, you're really a Rosh, you really could be wealthy. If you're Smech B'chelko and you're happy with what you have, possibly you can be content and feel good and not necessarily be impoverished, although it looks like on paper you are. So that's the mushel, and of course we're going to have to end up seeing next week how David responds, and of course we know the famous two words that he says, Chatasi LaHashem. We'll stop.